we have to recall that back in 1999, we were being told that the only people that could decipher what globalization meant was academics and think tanks, that the grassroots didn't really know what that meant.
That was a very different protest that were led by local communities of color that were probably never picked up by most of the media or never recognized, but it was certainly present in Seattle and certainly a force that we felt was very, very important, very different from the broader movement, which was extremely individualistic. This one was much more communal, a very different kind of approach.
One of the big criticisms of Seattle was, where was the color in Seattle? And I think that part of the charge was that it was a sort of indictment around how sometimes our movements are still riddled with white supremacy and issues of white supremacy, but it also was a call out to communities of color and groups that do base building work in communities of color to step up and say, our work is also part of an anti-globalization movement, and this is how.
Monday, November 30th, marked the 10th anniversary of the Battle of Seattle, when tens of thousands of social justice advocates, rank-and-file labor, and environmentalists came together to shut down the World Trade Organization's ministerial meetings in Seattle, Washington, and succeeded.
The significance of the direct action protests that shut down the WTO ministerial a decade ago will be celebrated in a large regional mobilization on this Saturday. The D5 mobilization is planned not only to commemorate a decade of victories and struggles by grassroots movements, but also to show solidarity with those opposing the WTO meetings taking place right now in Geneva, Switzerland.
I'm Wilfredo Marbilla, or Pantlikonda Kawili. I'm coming from the Philippines. I'm here just to be part of the so many people around the world shouting against, fighting against the disastrous effects of WTO, especially in economic and also in agriculture.
Thousands marched in the protest ahead of the World Trade Organization ministerial meeting beginning on Monday.
I'm Jürgen Kraus. I'm here in Geneva today on the 28th of November. We are traveling from Geneva to Copenhagen, and this is, yeah, you can say, the first common action we are doing with all these other people that are coming to protest against the WTO.
Swiss police fired tear gas and rubber bullets on Saturday at protesters who broke windows and set cars alight during a demonstration ahead of a major WTO conference in Geneva. Organizers later decided to end the demonstration due to the violence and because police prevented the march from continuing to WTO headquarters.
Why was the Battle of Seattle important? What significant critiques came out of the protests, and how has that affected movements for global justice in the United States?
Tonight on Circle A Radio, our guests are Tammy Bang-Lu from the Labor and Community Strategy Center, Ruben Solis of the Southwest Workers Union, and Colin Raja with the National Network for Immigrant and Refugee Rights. We'll also hear from Cindy Weisner, political coordinator for the Grassroots Global Justice Alliance. Stay tuned.
I am Colin Raja with the National Network for Immigrant Refugee Rights. I am the Program Director for International Migrant Rights and Global Justice at the National Network. 10 years ago, right before the WTO ministerial in Seattle, there was a growing kind of a movement around anti-globalization, kind of challenging a lot of the neoliberal policies and different kinds of trade deals that were coming down, particularly embodied by the WTO at that point that was ramping up and gaining strength. As an organization that was focused on organizing youth of color around global justice issue, we felt that this was really important, but also recognized that there was a significant gap between how most of the anti-globalization movement at that time was being organized, and how a lot of like community organizations organized around specific issues that were targeting their own communities. So we really felt it was important to elevate that and bring that to the forefront within this larger movement, especially recognizing that Seattle would be a momentous occasion and really an opportunity to engage with that. So we organized a delegation of about 25 to 30 youth of color, predominantly from the San Francisco Bay Area, and also connected with a number of youth of color organizations up in Seattle, and used that as an opportunity to engage around a lot of the street mobilizations, but also took the opportunity there to kind of develop more thinking and develop our own capacities and understanding about each other's issues, how we connected, and what was the overriding global framework, so to speak, that was impacting all of us. A lot of the work that we had been doing up to that point was really to monitor and gauge what was going on internationally, especially around trade and economic policies, anywhere from being involved in the 50 Years Is Enough campaign against the World Bank and the IMF years before that, and then all the way up to the point in Seattle, we really understood that it was a real struggle to get representation and leadership of communities of color within this broader, for lack of a better word, let's call it the anti-globalization movement. So we really recognized that was a significant gap, and there were a lot of obstacles, a lot of challenges, but we felt that was a real priority for us to try to overcome this, try to challenge a lot of existing structures and practices that was happening within the movement itself to make it possible for especially young people of color to take leadership.
My name is Tammy Bang Lu. I'm a senior organizer for the Labor Community Strategy Center and the Bus Riders Union in Los Angeles. It's somewhat of a think tank, act tank in L.A. that focuses on Los Angeles City and then the county, which is about 10 million person county, and then from there trying to, you know, make links between a national movement and really trying to think about a global movement for justice. The Labor Community Strategy Center is a member of the Grassroots Global Justice Alliance. So I was born in Vietnam and came to the States, and we set our roots in Seattle, Washington. When the WTO had its ministerial in 1999, I was a student at the University of Washington. And earlier, so if the actions were in November, sometime around August, I had participated in some initial meetings with the grassroots organization in Seattle called LILO. And they were bringing together the international workers to worker project that they had, talking about the impacts of free trade and the institutions like the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, and the World Trade Organization and its effect on third world nations, and particularly supporting structural adjustment policies that really dissipate the social state services in these countries and force a huge amount of debts that then poison the water and the planet as well as exploit workers. So it was at that time that I became aware that the WTO ministerial was going to happen in November, and then as a student, really did a couple of things in lead up to the action organized on campus, as well as the participating community colleges and high school campuses to get students involved. And then the second thing I would say is really trying to make more community-based connections. And so I was at that point in time really focused on trying to really get working class communities of color interested in these actions and trying to, through LILO, talk about the effects of WTO policies and how they're connected. 10 years ago, it's really crazy to imagine, but I was a young kid, and at that point in time, I mainly did support work for community-based organizations in terms of research, but that was the first time I'd ever been part of a mass mobilization, bringing out 50,000 people. And so that November 30th was just very exhilarating and scary and in awe about what we could do in terms of collective action. And subsequently, I found myself arrested for the next 5 days. So spent the rest of the WTO actions inside King County Jail, listening to folks outside asking for our release. And you know, I think I just remember a ton of washing over me. I mean, at one point, I was just feeling the contradiction of there was about several hundred of us at the King County Jail, and the level of which they were asking for our release, and then looking across the cell doors to the general prison population and thinking about, well, what about their release? And, you know, us being in that jail and the impact of then closing down on their regular lives so they couldn't get visitors, they couldn't have access to the TVs because they didn't want any of the protesters seeing the level of mass appeal calling for our release. And I think I had a lot of emotions wash over me.
You're listening to Circle A Radio on KBOO 90.7 in Portland. Tonight, we're looking back on 10 years of organizing for grassroots global justice.
This is Ruben Solis of the Southwest Workers Union in San Antonio, Texas.
We took a delegation. About 10 people went on this delegation organized by the Southwest Network for Environmental and Economic Justice out of Albuquerque, New Mexico. We went to the WTO in Seattle because we came from the experience of having lived what globalization meant in relation to the implementation and the effects of the North American Free Trade Agreement, NAFTA, that had gone into effect starting on January 1st, 1994. So between 94 and 99, we had been fighting NAFTA on the U.S.-Mexico border for a multitude of reasons, environmental justice reasons, workers' justice, and the whole question of the globalization of capital and the privatization of jobs and public services and how it was impacting especially grassroots and people of color and indigenous communities along the U.S.-Mexico border. So we felt that it was important that our grassroots voice be present and be heard in Seattle. Most of the folks that had been already preparing and organizing to be in Seattle had had a lot of leeway ahead of us because a lot of the information went out on the internet. And that was something that grassroots and indigenous groups did not have or had very little of at that time. So part of the experience was that when we got there, there was a power base that had been organized by the labor unions. And they had their hotel and their meeting space and their forums and their agenda already organized. We also saw that the environmental groups, Friends of the Earth, Greenpeace, and some of the other groups, already had their space organized and their forums and the agenda organized and everything. And then we saw some of the globalization groups like the International Forum on Globalization. They had their hotel lined up. They had their people there. They had their agenda and their forums lined up. And out on the street, the Black Bloc, the anarchists and youth and direct action people, they had their agenda and they had everything locked down. We felt left out as people of color, grassroots and indigenous voices. We felt left out in terms of being engaged in the process, in terms of a process that was inclusive. We also felt that we needed to create space for those grassroots people of color and indigenous voices to be heard. So we actually hit up on all those four basically power bases to try to get some space and some of our folks in so that we would have a chance to also voice our struggle in terms of globalization and the WTO and all of that.
Again, Colin Raja.
In spite of this knowledge of, you know, the gaps and the challenges within the broader movement, we were still taken by surprise and by shock, actually, about some of the issues on the ground. You know, as soon as we got to Seattle, we had mapped out certain kind of convergence points with other movements, spaces, and different kinds of organizations to connect with on the ground. But as soon as we tried to do that, we recognized immediately that this was not, first of all, a safe space for young people of color who are often targeted by police enforcement. And secondly, these weren't spaces that were naturally welcoming of very different kinds of organizing approaches. It was a very different culture, so to speak. So we almost immediately, on the first full day, made a decision collectively as a delegation that we would try to refocus our attention and work with a number of different groups that we had also identified with, especially in a number of communities of color. We continued to engage with a number of the street mobilizations and protests and trying to shut down the ministerial and everything like that. But we took on a very different kind of tactic in terms of who we engage with that. That was a very different protest, march, and all that were led by local communities of color that were probably never picked up by most of the media or never recognized, but it was certainly present in Seattle and certainly a force that we felt was very, very important, very different from the broader movement, which was extremely individualistic. This one was much more communal, a very different kind of approach.
Again, Tammy Banglu.
The thing that really crystallized the experience for me is you spend hours from doing community outreach to having workshops, talking to community forums about the WTO, going into classrooms, connecting with students. And I remember when we were marching to meet up with the march downtown, we had gathered all the students and we're going down Denny Hill. So if anybody is familiar with Seattle, you're cascading down Denny into downtown. And I remember at one point turning around and looking up and it was just flooded with students. I just felt there is a role for these mass mobilizations. And the level of political exposure, not just even like the momentum and the exhilaration of seeing thousands of people, 50,000 people, but even seeing thousands of students from community college to the University of Washington to, you know, local high schools, and just seeing thousands of students flood up Denny, I think that was just an amazing experience. But I think the WTO in and of itself was a huge political exposure. And I think for a lot of us, some of our work, obviously, we're trying to win concrete victories that change people's material lives. But what can't be understated is the level of which exposure that really shapes and pushes our consciousness, really challenges the thinking that we are so accustomed to doing because dominant ideology tells us, like, for instance, let's just take the cops, that they're there to protect our interests, right? Well, November 30th, I saw cops, and I saw us in really from some beautiful protests to very peaceful chanting and creativity. And then I saw the police with rubber bullets, tear gas. And then you begin to really think, whose interests are they serving? Who are they really there to protect? Whose interests are they serving? And so I think there's an important role for these mass mobilizations in terms of our political exposure to how the system works and our own place in it. And then begin to really think about how we then question what is it that we value as a people, as a community, and for a society. And I think for a young kid in your early 20s, it was huge.
Ruben Solis.
And we had a meeting at the end of the experience of the Battle of Seattle and the whole thing, which was a very intensive battle by grassroots and social movements and organizations that fought this whole global apparatus, the WTO, and brought it to a halt. So we felt very empowered, even though we also noticed that we had not been totally included.
From there, I dived head in into the global justice movement. Went to the International Monetary Fund actions in D.C., the RNC actions in Philly, the Democratic National Convention in Los Angeles, and at that point I'm really looking for the young folks of color that were part of a huge youth movement that has started in California, but making connections to folks in Boston and New York and us in Seattle. But at some point I just really thought about, wow, what are we building? I think the things that made it most crystallized was when we went to D.C. for the International Monetary Fund actions, the convergence zone was at Columbia Heights, and it's a huge immigrant community, a lot of Salvadoreños, some Vietnamese, South Asian, some Dominicans. And how much of those communities actually came out? How much were they actually aware of these actions that were coming in? And so it was a huge disconnect for me in the sense of going into a community and thinking about, like, there's an important role for these mass mobilizations, but in the long term, what are we building? And who do we think are the important forces that should be shaping change? And so even by the time we got to the Democratic National Convention in Los Angeles, there was a lot of pre-work. So I remember we were part of the Youth Action for Global Justice, Just Act, Youth Action for Global Justice. And these are some of the folks I met in Seattle when we heard that there was a crew of some 20 youth coming up from the Bay Area youth of color that were part of a lot of different youth organizations that were at that point in time fighting Prop 21, which was criminalizing of young folks, giving them adult sentences. And so we made those connections in Seattle. And then we continued to be part of the global justice movement together. And so by the time we got into Los Angeles, I think we were aware that some things needed to change in how we thought about mass actions. We were going to be walking into the convergence zone, and it was in Pico Union. So if folks are familiar with the Rampart scandals, the LA Police Department, this community is the home of Rampart Police Department. It's one of the most working class immigrant communities west of the Mississippi. So a huge undocumented population. And we were about to bring on a heavy presence of law enforcement scrutiny into an undocumented zone, into a working class immigrant, Central American, Mexican immigrant community. What was our responsibility for that? How much were they aware of the Democratic National Convention actions? And so I think some of the folks organizing that really began to make some challenges of thinking about how we engage the community.
That was Tammy Bang Liu, Senior Organizer for the Labor Community Strategy Center.
My name is Cindy Weissner, and I am the Program Coordinator with Grassroots Global Justice Alliance. For us, this 10-year anniversary of the battle in Seattle and the upcoming 10-year anniversary of the World Social Forum in 2010 is an important benchmark for our development as we really looked around at how the anti-globalization movement had been characterized. Many of our community struggles, or many of our own leaders who were, you know, on the front lines of different struggles around migration and immigration and the free trade agreements, or around climate justice and overall global well-being, or the issues around housing and gentrification. There was a lack of a understanding of where these sectors, how these communities were viewed, and often not described as part of the broader anti-globalization movement. And I think many of us were connecting our local struggles to a broader national movement building agenda that was connected to these international issues. So for us, it was important to mark that space, that the work that we were doing, we completely saw as a response to neoliberal policies and practices that not only impacted people from around the globe, but also what did that translate to our fights on the ground.
Colin Raja of the National Network for Immigrant and Refugee Rights.
Since Seattle, I think that GGJ, the Grassroots Global Justice Alliance, has been a significant force in kind of shifting things. The GGJ focus and how we're approaching that in terms of really bringing to the forefront of the global justice work and the global justice movement communities of color in the U.S., grassroots communities, working class communities, and saying this is part of global justice. I think one of the biggest dangers that came out of Seattle was this dichotomy that started to emerge between local and global, and people started talking about that differently. You know, local is this, global is this, and, you know, we need to make the local-global links. I personally thought that was a very, very dangerous and very, very problematic kind of framework because, you know, just as an example, you might consider water privatization as a global issue in Cochabamba, but what does that mean for local communities working around issues of water safety and food security, environmental justice on a local level? Is that a local issue? Why is that not a global issue? Whereas people in Cochabamba, water privatization is very much a local issue. So we wanted to say that within the U.S. as well, there are a lot of communities that face the same kinds of situations and same kinds of oppression that a lot of other communities around the world face. This was all a global issue. All of this is global. So I think GGJ has been an instrumental force in trying to bring that to being. And so that has significantly shifted over the years. It's still a struggle. It's still an ongoing struggle. But I think it's beginning to shift tremendously and beginning to get recognition on a national and international basis. Soon after Seattle and, of course, D.C., A16, you know, a few months after that, there was this move internationally to try to coordinate or try to pull together a parallel forum to the World Economic Forum, and that's how the World Social Forum was born in Brazil.
In 2002, we ended up taking grassroots leaders, organizers from different parts of the country to the World Social Forum in Porto Alegre, Brazil.
And in that process, we were able to meet other social movement leaders, in a lot of ways our global counterparts, people doing very similar work, but in a lot of ways, conditions and material conditions being very different. They had massive movements in the thousands and millions, and they basically, you know, in whatever exchanges that we had with different movements, whether it was the landless movement or the labor unions or the student movement or the women's movement, they would always ask us, you know, it's really great to be meeting folks who do organizing within the United States that have this politic, this broader politic, but what are you doing to hold your government accountable? So part of that conversation, as we took members and leaders, being completely inspired by all the movements and all the social change that was happening, particularly in Latin America and the Caribbean, but more than anything, taking on that real deep challenge back here to the United States. So I think that there was, for a long time, you know, the models, a lot of international folks sort of see these like single leaders or writers or left intellectuals as the movement leaders. And for them to see actual folks of color, working class folks, diverse grouping of people carry out this analysis and this work on the ground, they were very excited and said, why is it that you all don't work together? And why isn't it that you don't actually try to coordinate so you can actually have much more power?
That was the voice of Cindy Weisner. Again, Ruben Solis of the Southwest Workers Union.
We have to recall that back in 1999, we were being told that the only people that could decipher what globalization meant was academics and think tanks, that the grassroots didn't really know what that meant. And so we had lived it in our own experience, and we felt that grassroots and working class people and people of color and indigenous people knew more about globalization from their own experience, and that we needed to put a human face to that globalization and the impact. And so in 2003, we sent a big delegation, about 100 people from grassroots global justice groups, to the Third World Social Forum. And that really matured and developed. At the same time, there was the battle in Miami with the Free Trade Areas of the Americas, the FTAA, and the root cause march that took place there, and that really brought together, that really consolidated the global justice movement and grassroots global justice alliance. Additionally, there had been an experience in 2003 in Cancun, which was a battle against the WTO in Cancun, when the farm workers from Korea took the lead in that struggle. We were part and represented there. So all of this came together, even in spite of, you know, 9/11 and the setbacks that happened then. And by 2003, the root cause march in Miami by the Immokalee Workers Coalition and Power U and Miami Workers Center, that really brought together the grassroots global justice movement into a strong voice, a strong movement, and an independent power base that was not the FL-CIO, that was not the Enviros, and that was not in the International Forum on Globalization. So we felt that that was our day. We came into being, and grassroots global justice then took that process and made it a member-based organization, alliance, in 2005, in a meeting that took place in San Antonio.
Alô, meus companheiros do Movimento Sem Terra. Que prazer poder participar de projeto de tanta dignidade.
The last time I went for the World Social Forum in Belém this last January, they were celebrating that year their, I think, 20th anniversary, and they have a million members. A million members. I mean, imagine, I think a lot of us in the United States, we're not used to seeing real social movements that capture people's imagination. I think the closest I came after Seattle was the immigrant rights marches in Los Angeles. And these are conscious forces trying to shape a new reality for landless people in Brazil. And so they use the World Social Forum really very strategically. And so GGJ came together out of initially those organizations having that experience and really coming back to the U.S. saying, wow, we really want to build connections and to really think about how we want to converge movements and organizations and struggles in the United States. And really being very clear, we need to make the global link. Not just because we can see our counterparts in the U.S. and we can learn and choose best practices, but also having a real understanding that when we go to these international conferences, you know, and people are aware we're from the United States, the level of which this government, and not just the corporations coming out, but the interests of these governments really undermine the self-determination of a lot of these nations. Not much has changed when Martin Luther King used to say that the United States was the greatest purveyor of violence on the planet. So if you think about Afghanistan or Iraq or our attack on Pakistan, the, 610 military bases we have all around the world, the level of which right now we're about to enter a climate agreement in Copenhagen in the United States is barely even talking about a 20% reduction by 2005 standards. Any kind of reduction in 2005 standards is even backtracking Kyoto, right? So the level of what we see in terms of the economic crisis that's going on right now is really a crisis in capitalism. This model of development is unsustainable, and it forces a certain level of globalization, which in terms of meeting new markets, but also trying to get a hold of what's left of the world's resources. And you have like James Hansen out of NASA saying, we really have to be at 350 parts per million of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere in order to just stabilize global warming. We're currently at 385 parts per million. And there's no road to actually decrease. A lot of these false solutions that these bills are coming up with in Congress, you know, there's nothing clean about clean coal. Nuclear is not clean, right? And so a lot of these biofuels on a mass scale is not clean. We really need to be thinking about, as a planet and as humanity, what's at stake here. And I think it is life and death. The question of climate is not just an environmental issue or an environmental justice issue. It is a crisis in capitalism. It is an inherent part of capitalism to continue to use the world's resources for the benefit of a few. And so I think the more we make these connections, the more important it is that we see the importance of our work really challenging the policies of our government and really putting some restrictions. And it's our responsibility. So our tax dollars and the fact that we're rooted inside the United States makes it our responsibility to address the policies of our own government and push the Obama administration as far left as we can push it, right? And so I think Grassroots Global Justice came with that vision of really trying to unite grassroots community-based organizations rooted in working-class communities of color, rooted in labor, rooted in women's organizations, rooted in indigenous nations, rooted in immigrant communities. So 65 organizations representing that coming together.
That was Tammy Bang Lu. This is Circle A Radio on KBOO Community Radio 90.7 in Portland.
Tonight, we are featuring interviews with members of the Grassroots Global Justice Alliance, or GGJ. Next up, Ruben Solis, Cindy Weisner, and Tammy Bang Lu talk about the first United States Social Forum.
All of that experience then brought back a new challenge. Now what? We've gone over there. We made the linkages with the Global South Movement. We've learned and had a voice, and we have an independent power base. Now what? And that's where we came up with starting in Miami at the Job with Justice annual member assembly. We had a meeting with the International Council of the World Social Forum and proposed for the first time that there'd be a U.S. social forum. And so that process went from 2003. In 2004, we had the Consulta to see if U.S. Groups wanted to organize a U.S. social forum. They said yes. We went on and started the organizing committee, the National Planning Committee for the U.S. social forum. We set it out to hold it in 2006 in Atlanta, Georgia. And we had to move that because of Hurricane Katrina and the disastrous effects and the horrendous racism that was unsurfaced there during that time. So then it finally ended up happening in 2007, in the last days of June and first days of July in 2007.
So in that process in 2005, we ended up saying, you know what, it is true. If we're going to meet our global obligation and our mutual solidarity for liberation, we need to start figuring out how to build a multi-racial, multi-sectoral movement that is based in community struggles and in worker struggles, but is connected to each other and deals with the contradictions that we have with each other and the differences that we have and how difficult it is, but that ultimately is about trying to say we are taking responsibility of beginning to challenge in a more articulated and coordinated way our struggles, but also how is it that we are then internationalizing our demands and our perspectives and our framework.
The most important thing I think we did in terms of trying to help converge the movements in the United States are individual organizations in as a part of GGJ were central to building the first U.S. social forum in Atlanta in 2007. It brought together 10 to 15,000 people representing 1,000 different organizations, a lot from these grassroots bases to Atlanta, anchored by Project South. And we, for many years, only had one staff person hold down most of the work and a half a staff person looking at indigenous participation and a lot of organizations donating their staff folks to help build that process.
Lo and behold, we had a strong delegation of grassroots movements, people that were directly impacted by globalization, and we had established by then a strong, independent, grassroots, people of color, and indigenous power base for global justice, and we had made ourselves known in the international forums. What we set out to do from Seattle and the Battle of Seattle in 99, we were able to achieve by 2007 at the U.S. Social Forum, the first ever U.S. Social Forum in Atlanta. That was quite an accomplishment, given the fact that you had 9/11 happen right in between.
When the first social forum happened in Atlanta in 2007, that was the thing that people most talked about, was the diversity and how many working class people actually from all over the country were there and that they were in that social movement convergence process. And that ultimately, when we look at the last 10 years, one of the big criticisms of Seattle was, where was the color in Seattle? And I think that part of the charge was that it was a sort of indictment around how sometimes our movements are still riddled with white supremacy. But it also was a call out to communities of color and groups that do base building work in communities of color to step up and say, our work is also part of an anti-globalization movement, and this is how we've been able to do that in these last 10 years and be able to say, you know, it is important to keep having those deeper discussions, to keep challenging neoliberal policies, and to be able to ensure that the people in leadership, in process of these, are the folks that are impacted and that our struggle, not a U.S.-centric model. Globalization is also allowed for us to globalize our struggles and our unity, and I think that that's what these last 10 years have sort of shown us and what the social forum vehicle has given us as an opportunity.
That was the voice of Cindy Weissner, Program Coordinator for the Grassroots Global Justice Alliance. You also heard from Ruben Solis and Tammy Banglu. Again, Tammy Banglu.
Now, fast forward some 10 years, and I participated in the G20 actions in Pittsburgh. These were actions I wasn't directly part of organizing, but what I saw is something different. I saw community-based organizations with folks like Over the Rhine Community and really led by the United Electrical Workers and some of those folks and the anarchist collectives that were there really taking ownership of what does it mean for people to be coming into Pittsburgh. What would the G20 actions do? What would they like to see those actions do to strengthen the movement in Pittsburgh and strengthen individual organizations in Pittsburgh? And how did they want us to come into their community to engage? So there was a lot of leadership taken up on the local level and some agreements that got made. And so in some ways, not just for the actions that people see in terms of like getting into or interrupting the G20 actions, but really then we've started building. We did a people's tribunal on the G20 and the effects of the G20 with a good cross-section of organizations from Pittsburgh, so really getting to know some of the communities. You know, we had the Joseph Stiglitz panel with a lot of community representatives talking about what they wanted to see and the kind of the vision and the challenges. So, you know, some 10 years later, I think we've learned a lot in terms of engaging in these mass mobilizations and what it means to be engaging in local communities.
Again, Cindy Weisner.
We felt that it was really important to be in Pittsburgh and to be part of the actions and activities that were being planned in response to the G20. It was very clear that a room of 20 heads of state to come up with decisions and economic policies that would have long-term effects, we felt that it was really important to have our voice of resistance to that, because in terms of trusting that the people who got us into this mess would take us out did not make sense, or that they would try to resuscitate institutions as like the World Bank or the IMF when we know those are failed and are dead-end policies. So for us, one of our founding members, the United Electrical and Radio Machine Operators Union, actually is headquartered in Pittsburgh. And once that we found out that the G20 was going to be hosted in Pittsburgh, we got a call from our UE member and said, you know, we need to figure out what to do. For us, it was really important to, again, not just come in and out of Pittsburgh, but it was really important for us to do the work locally and to make the connections with other national folks doing organizing and then international folks as well. So we did some of that work about what would people in Pittsburgh think it was important to say, so that when activists and organizers came, ultimately they came away learning some of the important issues that people are fighting around. And one of the major issues is the issue of gentrification and development and public participation and how people have a say over the money that then is spent and then allocated. That was a very important connection, because I think that's the same thing. What happens locally in Pittsburgh and the community of Northside is on a mega level what the G20 is doing. It's like, here are some folks who then are much more accountable to banks and corporate developers and corporate interest or government interest, and not at all in the people who actually are voting for them, paying their taxes, and not having any say on how these long-term financial decisions are being made. So we organized the People's Voices set of activities, where we brought also international compañeras and compañeros from Mexico and Colombia and also from Quebec and Canada. We basically were making the connections about how is it that we're going to fight against this rescue of capitalism, and what is it that were the alternatives that we felt were important, and how to ground our struggles in the fight back strategies that we had on our local communities, in our homelands, but how was it that we were going to begin to create a much more coordinated set of activities so we can be stronger and much more effective in our fight. We ended up organizing a tribunal, a people's tribunal, in which we had speakers from different struggles, from the domestic workers to folks organizing in Asian communities, to the women's movement who are actually fighting against the double, triple exploitation of these economic policies and impacts on women and children. And so I think the People's Tribunal was an opportunity to say, we charge the G20 policies with violations of our human rights, and that anything that they came up with as solutions were not enough, and that the method of what we needed was a broader public participatory process in which we really wanted to have people have a real say in what are the solutions to these crises.
That was the voice of Cindy Weisner.
Again, Colin Raja.
The work that I do right now has a lot to do with building alliances with similar partners in the Global South as well as in other regions, including Europe. For us, very much a focus around looking at other communities, other movements that were facing similar kind of issues in their own region and wanting to work with us and wanting to be partners and allies into finding sort of collective positions, collective kind of agendas, and how we could strategize together to challenge this on an international level. You know, previously we always thought that we should try to educate ourselves and understand, you know, what's going on in other countries. And I think that's still very much important. But I think we're at the point right now where, you know, there's a level of maturity that we have that we need to be able to use that as an opportunity to engage with partners in the Global South as well as in other regions in the same conditions. Again, you know, there are communities even in the Global North that face the same kinds of things that other communities in the Global South face.
That was Colin Raja. Tammy Banglu.
2001, I left Seattle to go to Los Angeles to work with the Labor Community Strategy Center. When I was in L.A. for the DNC, I had saw all these yellow T-shirts in one of our actions, and it was representing the bus riders union. So it was a grassroots organization made up of bus riders. Portland, I understand, is actually having a transit riders union. In L.A., it was made up of domestic workers, hotel workers, security guards, so a lot of working-class folks of color. And it was trying to say, let's build an economic justice and environmental justice movement around transportation, but that it would be able to address a lot of the needs of the community, from the immigrant working class community. So in some ways, looking at it as a progressive organization on wheels. And it captured my imagination. So it also began to answer some of the craving I had in terms of what kind of change did I want to see myself participating in, and really trying to move between thinking of myself as an activist and really thinking of myself more as developing organizing skills. How do I move people that are most impacted by the systems that I want to change and the policies that I think are most detrimental, and really building up their consciousness, leadership, and the organizations that I think can help usher in, you know, real changing realities and changing people's consciousness and changing people's material conditions. So I really wanted to move from an activist mindset to an organizing mindset, to really building power. And we talk about grassroots, but what it really means is, you know, in this period in history, we need organizers. We need domestic workers who are organizing interns in their shop. We need, you know, bus drivers and bus riders, and, you know, we need working class folks to go into their own communities and call for policy changes, but really getting the community involved in making those changes. Having a clear, at least in terms of some political clarity of what we want to see change. I think it was going through that experience of the WTO that really moved me into the direction of really thinking about what kind of power did I want to build, and for whom, and who did I think was the important social forces that I think are fundamental for social transformation in the United States. And so in many ways, I think I've matured since Seattle, but I think a lot of my initial radicalness got shaped in those street actions in 1999.
Again, Ruben Solis.
As we build the movement, and as grassroots global justice continues to develop and struggle along to broaden and to deepen the social movement building process, we also have to take into account that the right-wing forces are not sitting idly and waiting to see what happens. They're already organizing against many of the things that we're fighting for. When they channel that into an anti-Obama and a pro-racist agenda, we have to also be clear about what is our national agenda. How are we fighting those right-wing forces and determining the national agenda, not only with Obama, but beyond that, in relation to the struggle in Honduras, the wars in the Middle East, militarism on the U.S.-Mexico border, union-busting kind of approaches from the government in terms of privatization. So that globalization of capital agenda of the WTO is still there right in front of us. We still have to fight that. We still have to come together and see what does the world that we want look like. We have to begin to be proactive, not just what we're against, but we're actually protesting and proposing the kind of reality that we want in the U.S. And I think that has to do with the slogan of the U.S. Social Forum, that for another world to be possible, another U.S. is necessary. We have to uphold our responsibility to the international social movement about what the role of the U.S. government and the U.S. imperialist approach is to their reality, oppression, exploitation. So how are we going to make that change possible within the U.S.?
That was Ruben Solis. Again, Tammy Banglu.
The social transformation is going to happen in the United States. It's not just going to be around healthcare. It's not just going to be around immigrant rights. It's not just going to be around jobs, but really thinking about how they all connect together and the communities that are impacted and the communities that need to be engaged. And then thinking about how we actually converge as a movement and start talking about how do we build a broader program of which then we see our individual struggles linked and then making the international link, right? And I think the U.S. Social Forum is one space that we could use strategically to really advance our own individual work and really strengthen as a movement and really bringing not just organizers and members, but really thinking about how we engage communities in this process. And so I'm really excited that the Pittsburgh actions really built on a vision of seeing the road towards the U.S. Social Forum. And so I think a lot of the grassroots participation that's going to the Copenhagen conference, going on the United Nations framework on climate change, taking place from the 6th to the 18th, a lot of grassroots forces are there. They're not just seeing that as one particular action or one particular engagement like the WTO, but they're seeing that as a way to build consciousness towards conversations and using the U.S. Social Forum as a way to think about how we engage the environmental justice movement, the environmental movement around climate that includes grassroots community voices in shaping what, not just awareness of it, but what kind of challenges we need to be making to ourselves and the administration and how we change a lot of the policies that are going on. And so I think that being, you know, using opportunities like the U.S. Social Forum is a strategic move to help strengthen a, you know, a real maturing of a global justice movement. And then also looking at using that as a space for some level of self-reflection in areas that the movement hasn't done well and areas that we need to grow and areas that we still haven't unlocked and questions that we still haven't unlocked as a movement.
So we have a big responsibility. We have to reach out to people and make a strong invitation to join the U.S. Social Forum in Detroit, June 22nd to the 26th of 2010, and that we get there in an organized fashion. We get there with clear resolutions and proposals to the kind of U.S. that we want and that is necessary.
Thank you to Cindy Weisner, Program Coordinator for the Grassroots Global Justice Alliance, Colin Raja of the National Network for Immigrant and Refugee Rights, Ruben Solis of the Southwest Workers Union, and Tammy Bang Liu, Senior Organizer for the Labor Community Strategy Center, for sharing their experiences with us. You can find out more information about GGJ and the U.S. Social Forum at www.ggjalliance.org.
And if you're ready to mobilize for grassroots global justice right here in Portland, you can take part in the D5 mobilization. The Portland rally begins at noon at Tom McCall Waterfront Park, where members from over 60 endorsing grassroots organizations will begin assembling under the Hawthorne Bridge. The march begins at 1 p.m., snaking through downtown and ending at Portland State University for an indoor concert and celebration. That's 12 noon at Tom McCall Waterfront Park under the Hawthorne Bridge. And if you want more information, go to www.december5.org or call 503-736-9777. That's a mass march, indoor rally, and concert mobilization against the 2009 WTO ministerial.
Thank you for listening to Circle A Radio. You can listen to this program and our past programs on the KBOO website at www.kboo.fm. We can also be contacted there or at circlearadio@gmail.com. Circle A Radio airs the first and third Wednesdays here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland. Thanks for listening.